Welcome to Growing Indoors, a limited podcast series from Cannabis Business Times, brought to you with the support of FOES. New light harvesting technology from FOES takes the stress out of greenhouse growing by monitoring natural light so that you don't have to. Light harvesters can sense changes in the natural light of your greenhouse and adjust the output of the LEDs so that they permit the precise amount of supplemental light that you need. No shortages, no wasted overages, and it all can be monitored on your phone with their app. Light harvesting is available on both the FOES 06i, a 1-to-1 HPS replacement grow light, and their supplemental greenhouse grow light Pleiades. Check out more of FOES' game-changing technology and request a free custom lighting plan at FOES.com. That's FOHSE.com. My name is Eric Sandy, and I'm the digital editor for the Cannabis Group at GIE Media. We're back again to conclude this 10-episode project, where we have focused our interviews on indoor cannabis cultivation from a broad spectrum of angles. This is episode 10. Our guests this week are Tommy Vaughn, the Chief Operating Officer and Head Grower at Resonant Cultivation in Oklahoma, and Matt Venable, Chief Compliance Officer at Resonant Cultivation. Launched in 2018 in the early days of Oklahoma's free market medical cannabis program, Resonant Cultivation is an organic operation that targets the craft cannabis segment, something that we addressed in this interview, and something that's become an on-again, off-again theme as we put this series together. We featured Resonant Cultivation in the August 2020 issue of Cannabis Business Times, and that comes up a few times in this interview, so be sure to check that out on CannabisBusinessTimes.com. With that, please enjoy my conversation with Tommy Vaughn and Matt Venable. All right, Matt and Tommy, thanks so much for joining us on the show this week. Very glad to get a chance to talk to both of you about what's going on at Resonant out in Oklahoma. We could certainly talk about the Oklahoma market as well. But of course, we're here to talk about indoor cultivation. And we've featured Resonant Cultivation a few times in the pages of Cannabis Business Times. So it'll be nice to dive into what you guys have been doing in this podcast setting. And of course, we can get up to speed, you know, now that it's been a little while since we last spoke. Maybe to begin, if both of you would like to sort of set the stage and maybe describe the Resonant facility out there in Paul's Valley, Oklahoma, and some of the maybe cool features of the facility that kind of stand out to you.
Okay, so yeah, we've got our facility is a smaller scale facility. We do organic craft cannabis there. We've got about 5,500 square feet of cultivation in flower of canopy, and we've got about another 2,000 square feet of veg space. We use raised beds, and like I said, we do organics and use dry amendments, and we use beneficial insects for our IPM and such.
Awesome. Yeah. And Matt, you know, from your perspective, are there certain aspects to those rooms or even features that help along the work that you and Tommy are doing each day?
Well, yeah, we installed a rhythm machine, which allows us to kind of sleep better at night. We've had a couple of times when the electricity went out, and this kind of regulates everything so that we can monitor it from afar. We can tell how much carbon dioxide we have in the rooms, and we can tell how bright the lights are, what kind of power we're running there. And we can, you know, kind of fine tune it from not have to be on site to do that. So that's kind of a new, a nice addition to have. As far as everything else, you know, it's all natural. All Mother Nature. You know, we don't use any kind of synthetics. We don't spray anything. Like Thomas was saying, it's all IPM. So it's really something we could get behind. That was kind of the focal point of our team when we started, was to make it as clean and find the best genetics possible. Do a lot of pheno hunting here. That's always a good time. And you know, just try to keep it clean and keep it high quality. Keep it craft, I guess, is what the kids are calling it these days.
Absolutely. And yeah, there's certainly a couple things that I want to dive into, and including maybe even just the word craft itself. This is something that's come up on the podcast recently. It's just an interesting word in the market just on its own. But Before getting into that, I wanted to maybe back up a little bit because you're, of course, in a part of the state and in a state that's very heavy on the agricultural industry. And I know that there's a bit of farming background in both of your own lives. So I wanted to maybe ask just a bit about what sort of farming backgrounds you have, but also how challenging it is to go from an outdoor agriculture environment and start working indoors. I know that's kind of a broad question, but there's got to be some sort of transition there. So what that learning curve has been like for each of you?
Well, we went up, when we were looking around, when we first started this, the bill passed, we went on a big hunt on who's growing the best cannabis in the United States. And we lit upon who you just recently talked with, Tyson Lewis, with High Noon Cultivation. We saw his flower. We saw how he ran things, and everything was indoors there. And we knew that that was kind of what we were going to go with. As far as going from outside to inside, we have some land down here in Paul's Valley. We've not really farmed it. We more lease out the land to the farmers. So as far as actual getting our hands dirty in the farming practices, other than, you know, gardening, I have a nice big garden and everything that we've been doing. But as far as the cannabis goes, we started indoors and really kind of focused on how to do it indoors. So we're looking at taking it outside, as a matter of fact, and trying to grow a little bit outside and experiment with that a little bit. The weather here in Oklahoma is pretty fierce sometimes. So, you know, if you're growing outside, you've got to deal with hail. You have to deal with just multitudes of insects. You know, wind is just constantly beating the buds together. So it's if you're going to grow high quality cannabis, you almost have to do it indoors. It's real, real tough to grow it outdoors. Not impossible, of course, but, you know, to grow it outside, it's going to get beat up.
Mm-hmm. We also have major fluctuations in temperature and humidity outside here.
Yeah.
Do those fluctuations play a role in the indoor environment? I know obviously we're talking about an indoor environment, but do you see any impact from the external environment affecting construction or anything?
Absolutely. Yeah. For instance, in the summers, we've had trouble keeping up with the heat. When it gets 105 outside, we're adding 5 tons of AC to each room to try to be able to keep up with that. And it definitely has a big impact on the humidity, regulating the humidity. It most certainly has an impact.
Oh. And you have to be real careful. We're situated right in between a bunch of fields where farmers are always growing, they're rotating crops all the time, and alfalfa, wheat, all kinds of different things, which of course attracts bugs. So you have to be very, very careful coming in here. Our, the rigmarole that we go through to keep everybody clean, you know, we make everybody wear suits and everything because, you know, a small bug, I mean, a small, anything can just creep in, just land on your shirt, gets in the flower room, and it's on, you know, because there's nothing in there really that can keep them down. So you have to be really careful about it.
Yeah, and we're literally 50 feet in each direction from three different crops. Yeah. We've got corn on one side. We'll have soybeans on another. We'll have alfalfa on another. So it makes things challenging.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I mean, it's a game of inches, really, or a game of degrees.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, sure, I was going to say, just running with the humidity topic for a second, you know, I mean, as a homeowner, I've learned a few humidity lessons. That's just in a small house, and it's no big deal. But I'm curious about how you guys have learned to manage humidity levels and how sensitive those levels end up being.
Oh, we've been playing with it a little bit, but our dehumidifiers do a really good job. We don't ever have a problem with there being too little humidity, at least not often. Every once in a while, it'll dip below where we want it, but usually it's on the higher levels, and we've got six big dehumidifiers in each flower room, and one in the veg and one in the dry room that really do a good job mitigating any kind of fluctuations with the humidity.
Yeah, it keeps it really steady. The only kind of problems that we've ever not and haven't really been problems, but it does, like Thomas was saying, get a bit dry sometimes. But the amount of moisture through transpiration that the plants put up in each room. You know, it just, it regulates itself. You just have those nice dehumidifiers in there, and it keeps it nice and steady for the most part.
And we can pretty much dial it in within a degree or two of where we like it. It'll stay pretty much put.
Mm-hmm. For environmental controls like that, and maybe humidity is a good example, or maybe another example comes to mind. I'm just curious about sort of the day-to-day maintenance or oversight, meaning, you know, some of this can sort of run on autopilot to a certain extent, but day-to-day, how, you know, what are some of the things that you and your team are sort of monitoring in each room?
Well, like Matt said, we have that rhythm system that gives us a pretty good idea. There's, I believe, 4 data points in each room, in different areas of the room, that send back the CO2 levels, the humidity levels. We've got a PAR meter in there. And so we're able to see that on our phones or computers at pretty much any time. But we also manipulate the environment constantly. We're constantly changing the light settings, where we bring the humidity down through our grow cycle. So we definitely have some input on what goes on in there.
You know, increasing and decreasing the lights just to try to replicate what it is outside, you know, to make it a cloudy day or
right.
No clouds at all. And it's bright and coming down hard. You know, just kind of giving plants, trying to make it seem as natural as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, when you go outside, you don't have sun every day, all day long. So we try to replicate a little bit of that indoors.
For sure. I know for the cover story that I've referenced a few times, you know, that came out in August 2020. Obviously, we spoke shortly before then. As everyone recalls, that was the early days of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And so not to focus on that, but I'm curious if over the last 2 years, if there are certain workflows or processes that may have been brought about by the pandemic or even by the economic pressures of the last couple of years that maybe have changed how you guys work day to day.
As far as the economic pressures, what we have done is we've gone from, we've started creating about a 6-month inventory because of shipping delays and just like soil not being available, essentially. Yeah. And so we've built up about a 6-month inventory that we keep stocked up and on hand at all times to make sure that we're always ahead of the curve on that. And we don't get stuck where we, you know, for instance,
we don't have
the last week. Yeah. The last week I ordered 8 pallets of soil and it was supposed to be here 2 weeks ago. And now they're telling me it's going to be another month. So luckily we have a backlog of the amendments and the soils that we used in case situations like that arise. And we didn't have that problem before COVID hit, before the pandemic. So that's been one way, at least for me, that has really changed things.
Yeah, certainly a common theme up and down the supply chain. Sort of zooming in, I suppose, to the market itself, I wanted to, well, I know the word pheno hunting came up earlier, and maybe we could flag that. There's a lot of different ways to go about that. It is something that that Tyson and I had spoke about on that podcast episode a few weeks ago. Could you maybe talk about that process and how you guys have honed that over time?
Sure. So we don't have a dedicated room. Tyson has a dedicated room that he can run pheno hunt in, and we've got just got our 2 flower rooms. So we've gotten real creative in the ways that we do it. We've built little rolling carts that we can push in between the aisles, and we can really only fit about 200 to 250 seeds in those carts in between the aisles. So we try to pop about 250 or so every 6 to 12 months, just so we can keep fresh genetics coming through. And even then, it's very difficult to find something that's worth releasing to the market. I mean, we've had 250 seed pheno hunts where we've gotten absolutely nothing out of it. So, you know, it's very difficult to go in there and find something that is truly exceptional.
Yeah, I know, you know, thinking of the retail segment of the marketplace, of course, one change since we last spoke for that story was the opening of Mosaic Plus and, you know, the retail arm of what you guys are doing. How has that influenced some of the cultivation decisions on your side of the business?
Oh, well, we've gotten a lot of feedback from the store, obviously. So the strains that we thought may be working or were going to work have not. And we've increased the numbers on other strains because that's what the public likes. So we've gotten a lot of really good feedback out of Mosaic in that regard, just getting a sense for what Oklahoma wants, essentially. And so that's influenced a lot about where, what genetics we're trying to go find, and how much of each genetic we're trying to produce.
Yeah. And, you know, I know there's a lot of, I suppose, curiosity about the Oklahoma market from outside the state. It's certainly, for a lot of reasons, it's a unique market and it's an exciting market. In just general terms, what does the market want right now? What are some of the genetic characteristics that you guys find are selling really well?
Unfortunately, it's high THC.
Sure, yeah.
I think that's the main and how they look, essentially appearance, I think, are the two biggest driving factors. And I don't at all agree with that. I think that's what really drives product.
People think they're getting more bang for their buck that way. You know, they get the high THC, they're getting more for their money. That's kind of how they look at it, which, you know, really, if you've smoked a lot of cannabis, you understand that the terpenes and all the little nuances of cannabis just adds to what makes a great strain. And hopefully education down the road will bring more people to understand that lab results aren't everything.
Yeah, I mean, that may be a segue in its own right, because I wanted to ask whether we're talking about Oklahoma or other states, but obviously Oklahoma is relevant to this conversation. Is there advice that you might give to someone who may be coming from an agricultural background or even a business background who wants to get into the cultivation side of this business? Education seems like maybe a backbone of that question and answer, but I'm curious what you might say to someone who is, you know, 21 years old and is looking at this as a possible career path.
For one, I would say to look at, we were talking about craft cannabis, and unless you're wanting to hook horns with the really big growers out there that are all on hydroponics, you know, you're going to want to find a niche that that you can actually get into and make a profit. I mean, that's the whole thing that everybody wants to do, is become profitable. But you know, you've got to find that certain niche. And I think if you're starting small, you need to get into an element of growing the best cannabis out there, because there's a big market for it. People love small businesses. People love to frequent small businesses and give their money to small business rather than a large corporation. Nowadays, it seems like more and more people are doing that. They're wanting to go organic. They're wanting to find the mom and pop that's doing it right, that has clean ways of growing. So if I were to tell somebody, if you're going to get into this game, is that's what you're going to go for, is that area. Otherwise, you're just going to be in a sea full of sameness.
Yeah, absolutely. If you don't have $100 million in your bank account, you've really got to find a way to differentiate yourself from other people, or else you're just going to get washed away. And I would also add on top of that, if you're going to do it, you put your heart and soul into it, because that's what it takes.
Yeah. And work on your branding. Branding is huge. You know, that, like I was saying with the family business, people want, they love stories like that. They love, the small guy that, you know, that makes it out on top, and they want to shop there. They want to spend their time there and, be part of that growth, you know, whether it, even if it's, is just purchasing that cannabis, people would, they're, you know, you could see the organics growing everywhere. I mean, you go into Walmart now and their organic section is just exploding. And that's because people are watching what they're putting into their bodies, and, they don't want sprays. They, you know, they like it natural. And so if you can do that, and it's tough, but, if you can get in there and get your hands dirty and succeed at that, you'll be rewarded, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's certainly true. And it really, you can see this story playing out in many markets across the country, and resonance a great example of that. maybe taking that organics theme that has come up a few times in this conversation, I'm curious if there are maybe misconceptions or even common mistakes that you guys may see that other growers are doing. If they're trying to get into organics and start working with living soil beds, are there things that maybe they need to watch out for or make sure that they avoid doing?
Well, like Matt mentioned earlier, one of them is just be extremely diligent and clean because you're not using sprays to go in there and knock down insects. So you have to be very, very careful about what you bring in the facility, and you have to be very, very careful about what you're bringing in the facility, essentially.
Yeah. Are there either within that sort of organic concept or in other areas of the cultivation operation, are there certain techniques that you guys are working on or anything that you're sort of trying to add to the operation over the next few months or year?
Well, we've been toying with the idea of getting putting some hoop houses out there and trying to grow outdoors like we were talking about. That's something that seems really exciting. Get some larger strains that can withstand some of the abuse that they're going to be getting. But if you can have some heat tolerant plants that have a nice yield, it'd be fun to try a lot of that out there. But it's going to be a learning experience, that's for sure.
Certainly, yeah, and I suppose that's a common theme, and what makes all of this so much fun. Tommy and Matt, you know, it's been great catching up with you here. Love talking about the indoor environment. There's so many interesting things going on, not only in that space, but certainly in the market and in Oklahoma in general. And we'll make sure to point listeners back to that cover story from not too long ago. I think it certainly plays a role here, but. But in the meantime, yeah, Tommy and Matt, really appreciate you guys joining
us. Awesome.
The show this
Thank
week.
You, Eric.
Hey, sure thanks a lot, Eric. Appreciate it.
Yeah. You have a good afternoon, buddy.
And that's a wrap on our final episode of Growing Indoors. That was episode 10, and it's been a really fantastic 10-episode journey. Definitely hope you enjoyed that conversation with Tommy Vaughn and Matt Venable out at Resonant Cultivation in Paul's Valley, Oklahoma, just south of Oklahoma City. I know I did. It's great to get a chance to catch up with them, especially after writing that cover story a few years ago about how Resonant was adapting to the very interesting medical cannabis market in Oklahoma. So definitely glad we could get a chance to talk with them in this environment as we talked indoor cultivation over the last 10 weeks with this series, Growing Indoors. It's been a lot of fun putting this together. Really want to shout out Foes for sponsoring the project, making this possible. They've been a great partner the whole way, and very excited to keep working with them on future projects. But in the meantime, we're going to make sure that this archive series gets out there more and more. We're going to keep promoting Growing Indoors, and we're going to continue other podcast projects along the way. But the intent of this project was to allow it to live as sort of an evergreen, timeless piece of information about indoor cultivation. Hopefully the interviews were entertaining along the way. A lot of great guests. We had a lot of fun putting this one together. And like I said, keep an eye out for future podcasts from the Cannabis Business Times team. One last shout out to Foes. They really were fantastic and they made this possible. And in the meantime, keep an eye out for more from Cannabis Business Times. Thank you so much.